What is up, everybody? This is the first episode of my new podcast, Cryptic Truth, Are You Afraid? I am your host, Spring Gardner, and I am so excited to be doing this with you guys. I love all things spooky, all things weird, all things really mind-blowing and just make you say, what the fuck? I think that's what true crime is, and so I thought, why not do a podcast and talk about what I absolutely love to talk about on a daily anyways? I've been kind of procrastinating this because I will record, I'll go to edit my audio, and like you might hear a little noise in the background, and I was just freaking out. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't have these little noises in the background. But one of my friends told me, shit happens. It's not going to be perfect. A lot of podcasts have a car driving by, dog barking. It's just life and shit happens, and that really helped me get through this. I don't want to be too edited. I want to be myself. That's what I believe a podcast is for. So thank you, my friend, for telling me that. I really needed it. I really want this podcast to not only focus on true crime, but to get into disappearances, ghost stories, conspiracy theories, everything imaginable, everything crazy, everything wacky. Now, my first case that I wanted to do is an infamous Wyoming case. It is the murder of Little Miss. A lot of people know about it. A lot of people don't. And I think there's a lot of different versions of this murder case. A lot of different theories as to what happened in certain aspects of it, just because nobody knows except for Little Miss, the person that died, and the person who did it. So there's kind of a lot of speculation, but it all pretty much ties together. So if my version's a little different than what you've heard, I think we all have a general idea of what happened, but we don't know for sure. I think the Little Miss murder case is what really sparked my interest in true crime. I was like 12, 13 years old at the time, asking about this case. Probably shouldn't have been that young, but here we are. I always found it so interesting. I feel like a lot doesn't happen in Wyoming. It's just crazy to think about. I mean, this happened in the 80s, but it's still such an infamous case. It scares the shit out of you, especially if you're a young girl. My advice, just from knowing this case, girls, protect yourself, trust your instincts. If something doesn't feel right, it's not. And don't trust anyone, especially any males, strange males that you don't know. You just never know. So we're going to get into this. This is the infamous Little Miss murder case. The Little Miss murder case is very, very interesting. It's very gruesome. It's really a teenager's worst nightmare. Lisa Marie Kimmel, also known as Little Miss, was born on July 8th, 1969. She was born in Billings, Montana, and that is where she was raised. That's where her family was from. After Lisa graduated high school, she headed to Denver to go to school, and she was working at a fast food chain. She was actually a manager there. She got moved up really fast, and she really had it altogether. She was only 18 years old, but she really had a plan for her life. She was very responsible. She knew what she wanted to do. And she really just, you know, she was very responsible and she went for it. On the day of March 25th, 1988, now this is when everything takes place. Lisa Kimmel was planning to travel from Denver back to her hometown of Billings, Montana, for the weekend, and she had planned to stop in Cody, Wyoming on the way. That is where her boyfriend, Ed Jurok, lived. She was going to pick him up on the way, and then they were going to head to Billings to spend time with her family. Her boyfriend, you know, she hadn't been around them. She was in Denver going to school and working, so she wanted to spend quality time with them. Lisa Marie Kimmel headed out that evening a little after 4 p.m. She left Denver. She told Ed that she was going to pick him up, and then they were going to go from there. Hours had passed, and Ed begin to grow concerned because he hadn't heard from Lisa and she should have picked him up by then. So he was a little concerned because it's not like Lisa to not try and get a hold of somebody if she had, you know, gotten behind, if she got in a wreck, if something had happened that was delaying her timing. Ed decides to call Lisa's parents, Ron and Sheila Kimmel. He left a few voicemails. They didn't answer right away. And he just asks, hey, have you heard from Lisa? I haven't heard from her. She's supposed to be here by now. And they hadn't heard from her either. They called Ed back and said, no, we haven't heard from her. Let's find out what's going on. So that's when they decide to hit the interstate and kind of travel along the route that Lisa would have taken. Now, from Denver to Billings, that's a pretty far drive, about 8 hours, maybe longer. So they were just going where they knew where she might have been. Something had happened. If she had driven off the road, it was March, so it was more than likely snowy. Could have hit a blizzard between Denver and Cody. Friends and family went out and traveled, and I mean, they didn't see anything, which the likelihood of it wasn't very good. They still hadn't heard from Lisa. They hadn't seen her. So the next morning, that is when Ron Kimmel, her dad, decided to file a missing persons report. They sent up helicopters to do an aerial view of where she had been traveling. The night of March 25th, Lisa was pulled over by a patrolman outside of Douglas, Wyoming. Now, Douglas isn't too far from Casper, Wyoming, which we'll tie into this a little later. She was pulled over for going about 90 in a 60. Like, she was absolutely hauling ass. This patrolman that picked her up, at the time, they recorded every traffic stop that they conducted. They had audio tapes of the traffic stop. I have heard this traffic stop, this interaction with Lisa and this patrolman. And really, it just boils down to, do you know how fast you were going? She answers yes. She has to verify the color and make of her car. And at the time, since she wasn't a Wyoming resident, she had to place a $125 bond, cash bond, right then and there, or he had the right to take her in. She didn't have the cash on her at the time. And this officer knew that Lisa was responsible, that she was a good person, but he had to do this. And she asked, can we pull up just a little ways? I'm going to go to this ATM and I will give you this money. I just don't have the cash on me. The patrolman said that he hemmed and hawed about it. He didn't know if he wanted for her to travel and for him to follow her to the nearest ATM, but he decided to do it anyways. He went ahead, let her drive to the nearest ATM. She pulled out the money. That patrolman was the last person to see Lisa Kimmel alive. And I'm sure it was hard for him knowing that he was the last person. And if he would have just took her in, didn't let her go to the nearest ATM, that she would still be alive today. And I'm sure that hits really hard for him. There's not a lot to it within the first week of her being missing. It's just really trying to find her car and to find her and just pick up the pieces after she got pulled over outside of Douglas, but there isn't anything after that. And so, of course, the patrolman being the last person to see her alive, he did become a suspect. It's just standard police procedure. He was the last person. He was easily cleared. He had other traffic stops. He didn't have any intention or any purpose to take her. So he was cleared really fast. But they had to make sure to rule him out as a suspect. Now this case jumps forward to 8 days later. Two fishermen were fishing in the North Platte River outside of Casper, Wyoming. Now I said Douglas and Casper are not too far from one another. As these two fishermen are fishing in the river, they notice a dead body downstream. They instantly knew that it was a dead young girl. She was face down in the water, only in her underwear. And they knew this is not okay. This is not an accident. They call the sheriff's department there, and the Casper Sheriff's Department they take it over. They conduct the investigation of this dead body in the water. When they arrive on scene, they get statements from the fishermen. They do every standard police procedure they need to when a dead body is found. And I have seen these crime scene photos, and they're pretty disturbing. But when they flipped her over in the water, she had 6 stab wounds to her chest. Very, very methodically planned out stab wounds. It wasn't just random, one in the shoulder, one in the collarbone. The way that the detective and the coroner described it, it was as if the person that did it placed his palm on her chest and stabbed following the 5 fingers, almost making it into a palm. So those stab wounds were very lethal. They knew she was murdered. They knew it was more than likely sexual assault. She was only in her underwear. But they didn't really have much else to go off of. They didn't know who she was. They had no idea who she was at the time of discovering her body. And when they take her body to get an autopsy done, Dr. James Thorpin of Casper conducted the autopsy. And his interview describing Lisa Kimmel's autopsy, you can tell it really hit home with him that it was saddening. She was a young girl, somebody's daughter, somebody's friend, but they didn't know who this girl was. And so Dr. Thorpin, when he was conducting the autopsy, decided to take this Jane Doe's dental records and match them with any missing person. That is when the dental records were a match to Lisa Marie Kimmel. So they knew who their Jane Doe was. She wasn't a Jane Doe anymore. It was the young 18-year-old girl that had gone missing that everybody within Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana has been trying to find. They found her, but not in the way that they hoped, because this young girl had been brutally murdered. She'd been sexually assaulted. They found binding marks on her wrists and legs, indicating that she had been held captive at some point. With the interview that I watched with the coroner that did this, it showed her autopsy photos. And they were disturbing. What this poor girl had endured within more than likely 7 days since she went missing to her them finding her body. Nobody really knows what happened in that time frame, except for what they were able to conduct from the autopsy. The binding marks, the rape kit. They knew she was raped, she was held captive, but they didn't know everything else behind it. Only Lisa knew and the person responsible. Now, when they did the rape kit, they did find semen present. At this time, they didn't have the best way to detect DNA, but they did have a basic testing system. If anybody within the criminal database, if they had been arrested, if they had been in prison or jail, their DNA was in the system. So they ran the DNA from the semen to see if it matched anyone, and it didn't. It came up a dead end, and they didn't have anything else. That was really the only thing that they had linking whoever did this to Lisa. It was in the semen. Now, the Natrona County Sheriff's Department, they conduct their investigation because they want to find out who the hell this guy is that murdered this young girl. They go from where her body was found in the river. They go up a few miles upstream, and they land at Old Government Bridge. A pretty tall bridge, just really your average bridge. And that is when they notice that that is where the crime scene is. There is a pool of blood, and from what they conduct, they know that she was alive when she was brought there, but killed and thrown over the bridge. So it's almost as if they barely missed the guy, because she hadn't been dead in the water that long. They tried to find anything they could to see if maybe the person responsible left something, really anything to tie that person to Lisa's killing, but they came up short. There really wasn't any hard, concrete evidence of who did that to Lisa. The crazy thing about this case is that it goes cold for 14 years. The Kimmel family having no idea what happened to their young daughter. Now, when they had discovered that it was Lisa's body, Detective George Jensen of the Billings Police Department, that was in charge of this whole investigation, he went and let the family know that they had found Lisa, but not in the way that they'd hoped. And watching an interview with Sheila Kimmel, Lisa's mom, they had really expected it to be from something else. They knew she was dead. They had a feeling that she was dead, but they thought maybe she got in a car wreck. They never imagined that she was murdered and tortured and held captive. That is a parent's worst nightmare. I'm not a parent, but I have nieces and nephews. I can't even imagine. I'm like jumping around everywhere. I'm sorry. Lisa is taken back to Billings. Her body is taken back and she is put to rest. And the family is trying to move on with their lives and trying to live without their precious daughter, which I'm sure they would never be the same. A year after Lisa's disappearance, so in April of 1989, Ron Kimmel went to visit his daughter's grave. And that's when he noticed an odd note taped to Lisa's headstone. There was a note taped on her headstone with packing tape. And he instantly knew it was something suspicious. So he called the cops and the cops took the note in. And that's really like their first piece of evidence, like major piece of evidence besides the semen of who did this. Because the person that left the note was the killer. Now I'm going to read the note to you. Lisa, there aren't words to say how much you're missed. The pain never leaves. It's so hard without you. You'll always believe in me. Your death is my painful loss, but heaven's sweet gain. Love always, Stringfellow Hawk. Now, if I was her dad reading that note, I would be freaked out too. Because they knew that nobody in the family wrote it. It was the person that did it. They knew it was. And that's really when the FBI started to get like really involved. They started to build a profile of who this killer is. What they conducted from their profile was that this man was in his late 20s, early 30s. He was a lone wolf, didn't have any friends. He was more than likely still residing in the Casper area. It was more than likely not his only kill. He's probably done it beforehand and may do it again. That he more than likely approached Lisa at a gas station or a rest area. They knew they had a profile of this man, but they didn't know who he was. They were still stuck trying to figure out who he was. They had an idea of what he was like, just not a name. No DNA, nothing like that. They take that note to try to do a handwriting link. Now, handwriting experts tried to conduct if they were able to match the handwriting from the note from anybody else. I'm not exactly sure how they did it without having a person in mind, but they tried to analyze the handwriting to see if they could get someone, and they got nowhere. So this goes cold. It sits cold 14 years. Natrona County Sheriff's Investigator Lynn Cohey, she decided to take a look at Kimmel's case. She went through cold cases and decided to take one last look at Lisa's. It had been 14 years. Maybe they had found something. Maybe they had missed something. DNA technology was a lot better now, 14 years later than it was in 1988. She sends the semen sample that was from the rape kit, from the autopsy, to the state crime lab. And that is when they compare it to 2,000 felony offenders within Wyoming. This wasn't a fast process. It took a few months for Lynn to get any results back. And when she did, from the interview I watched, she said that her jaw dropped to the ground because they had a hit. The semen belonged to a man named Dale Wayne Eaton. He was from Moneta, Wyoming. Minita is not too far from Casper, where Lisa was killed. He was in a Colorado penitentiary for a firearms charge, and so that is how his DNA got into the system. His DNA wasn't in the system before because he hadn't been arrested, but he was arrested. He was serving time for a firearms charge. The investigator, Lynn Cohey, in the sheriff's department immediately decided to go and interview Dale Eaton to see if they could get something out of this man and ask, why was your semen present in this young girl that was murdered? They go down to Colorado. They get permission to talk to Dale Eaton. And Dale displayed typical psychopathic traits. Lynn said in an interview, when her and the detective went down to Colorado to talk to him, that he was very bubbly. He really wanted to talk to them. They asked him, do you know this Lisa Kimmel that went missing? And he was like, oh yeah. Yeah, I heard about her on the news. You know, just acting as if he read it on the news and heard it on the news. And they ask him, well, why was your semen found in her? And that's when he shut up. He didn't want to speak to anybody. He instantly wanted his lawyer. He didn't want to say anymore. And they knew that they had him. But the problem with that is they wanted to indict him on more than just a DNA charge. Because they had a fear that Dale's lawyer would argue that, yeah, he had sex with this girl, but he didn't kill her. So they needed something more than circumstantial evidence. They needed hard, direct evidence to tie Dale Eaton to Lisa Kimmel's murder. Now, a little backstory about Dale Eaton. This is what is so interesting to me about this case, because Dale Eaton grew up and went to the same school as my grandpa. So my grandpa kind of knew him. He said that he went to school when they were younger in elementary school, and he was weird then, but he didn't know him as an adult. But I still think that is so interesting that he knew him when he was in elementary school, and he was a weird kid then. Back to Dale Eaton's life. So the investigator and the detectives decide to pick Dale Eaton's life apart. Now, I've listened to other podcasts about the Little Miss murder case, and a lot of the facts, they were just wrong. They were not correct, not valid. The detectives and the investigator went to talk to Dale Eaton's neighbor. Now, other podcasts that I've listened to say that he didn't have any neighbors. He lived in a school bus. Not true. Not true at all. He had a neighbor by the name of Doris Buckta and her husband. There's video footage of her discussing Dale Eaton and what it was like to live by him. So going into that, the detectives decide to go talk to Doris Buckta. They just ask about Dale Eaton, what she thought of him. And this lady was older. She was in her 90s at the time of this interview. And this was in mid-90s. Doris called him weird. That was the first thing that came out of her mouth, was that Dale was a weird guy. She had stated that Dale, around the time that Lisa went missing, was digging a huge hole in his front yard. Now, for those of you that don't know, in Minita, Wyoming, it's literally the middle of nowhere, sagebrush, sand. There's nothing there, like absolutely nothing. Not a pretty green front yard. No, dirt, sagebrush. That's literally it. So when I say front yard, just the front of his house. Doris said that Dale stated that he was digging a water well. Doris said that he was absolutely crazy if he thought he was going to dig a water well by hand. Dale just said that's what he was doing, and Doris said that she just figured he thought he could do it and just let him go about it and didn't worry about it because Dale was so weird. So this interview becomes a very key part of the investigation. They decide to get a search warrant for Dale Eaton's property. They want to know what is up with these holes around his house, with this large hole in his front yard, as well as others around the property. They get a search warrant. They're able to conduct a search of the premises. They start digging in these sinkholes and these holes around the property. And that's when little pieces of evidence come together as one. This is the direct evidence that they need to charge Dale Eaton with the murder of Lisa Kimmel. Not just DNA, circumstantial evidence. They needed hard, direct evidence, and they got it. As they were conducting the search around the premises, in these holes they found a hubcap from a Honda car. They found a front fender. They found a back fender. They found so many little pieces of what appeared to be a black Honda car. Lynn Cohey, the investigator from Natrona County, she was there during the search, and she said that it was unreal, that they knew these little holes that were dug around the house with little pieces of evidence. They knew that they were going to find something big. And that's when they get to the big hole in his front yard. They dig it up, and that's when they hit a gold mine. Lynn describes this moment as being surreal. Everybody that were doing the digging, they just went quiet because they knew what it was. They had uncovered a hole, besides a missing hubcap and a few fenders, whole car buried in his front yard. Black 1988 Honda CRX with the license plate Lil Miss. They knew they hit a gold mine in this case. This car had been nowhere to be found within these 14 years that Lisa's case went cold. They were never able to find anything. Her car, nothing. Just to be on the safe side, the investigators matched the VIN number with who the car was registered to. It was Lisa Kimmel. The license plates, Lil Miss, really gave it away, but they had to be cautious and make sure to do everything they could for court, stating that they had the direct evidence that it was Dale Eaton that had her car. This whole car buried in his front yard is what gets Dale Eaton convicted for the rape and murder of Lisa Kimmel. Dale Eaton is tried and he is found guilty. He gets on death row in Wyoming. Once they knew that they had the man, they went back to the note that was taped on Lisa's headstone. And the handwriting expert that worked on it previously decided to analyze the note with letters Dale had written in prison. And the handwriting matched. It was a 100% complete match. Dale Eaton was sentenced to death row. And there is a very long line of theories that he is more than likely responsible for many, many more murders throughout the Great Basin in Wyoming and around surrounding areas. There's just no proof, but many believe that he is responsible for the majority of those murders, missing people, disappearances. This case is just crazy to me that a whole car was buried in his front yard and he just, whatever. It's nuts to me. Nuts to me. It's so smart of them to find the well, that the supposed well that he was digging, suspicious. You know, another interesting part of this story, and I think this is also why I really like this case. My dad was on, well, he still is. He was on the fire department that burnt down Dale Eaton's house by the request of the Kimmel family. The Kimmel family didn't want any reminders of what happened to their daughter, where she was more than likely held captive, beat, raped. They wanted it gone. And so they were able to burn it down. My dad was on the fire department that did it. And my dad said that there was so many TV crews and so many people that gathered around to watch this house burn down. The Kimmel family was there. He said it was very, very surreal. It was like a weight was lifted off the Kimmel shoulders, but then again, it was very, very sad. And my dad actually has a note from the Kimmel family thanking him and the fire department personally for getting rid of that horrible reminder of his daughter's, of their daughter's death. So I think that's pretty cool. And I think that's why my dad would talk to me about it, just because he was able to meet the Kimmel family and kind of help them get closure for her death, which I think is really awesome. Nothing will ever bring their daughter back, but it's a nice thing to have that part gone, have that chapter of it closed. It's also crazy to think of what happened to Lisa in that 8-day period from her going missing to her body being found. It's scary to think of what he did to her. I can't even imagine. Dale Eaton is a sick, sick, twisted man, and he deserves to rot in hell. Later in my episodes, maybe not the next one, but a few after that, I'm going to go into more detail on Dale Eaton, because like I said, there's a theory that he is the man responsible for many, many more murders and disappearances within Wyoming, which is what I'm going to dive into. May not be the next episode, might be. I haven't decided yet, but thank you guys so much for listening in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will be back next week to discuss a new case. So yeah, thank you guys for listening in. Stay weird, stay spooky. See you next week. Bye.